Tony Jarvis joins us for another Kōrero. Tony was caught up in the whole care scene as a kid, but you wouldn't really call it care. His life has been changed since he was 9 years of age and put into care, and as such we're looking at the inquiry into Oranga Tamariki here. He lives down in Alexandria in the central Otago, and he says that the governance group and the high-profile dames that have been pushing Oranga Tamariki hard have cut communication and now refusing to collaborate with claimants on the DY2915 report. He's had a difficult life, but he's come to terms with it and he's been talking publicly because he hopes that his story might help others. He's with us today. Again, Tony, thanks for joining us on the show again, brother. Tēnā koe.
Thank you.
Good on you, Tony. How's life for you, mate, at the moment?
Oh, well, you know, as you just mentioned, I've had come from a pretty hard upbringing and background, and, you know, I'm a survivor of the state, and I live with my demons most day, but as you said, I've come to terms with most of them and understand the ramifications of my abuse and my past and failed care and the impact it's had on my life. And hence, I got involved with the Royal Commission inquiry recently and gave evidence in Hastings at the urgent inquiry of the Y2915 claim.
Thanks, mate. What can you share with us the gist of this? Because there's criticism that those who were sort of spokespeople for and front and centre in the challenge against Oranga Tamariki have gone to ground.
Yes, well, look, first of all, Y2915 sets the framework and the groundwork for many other claims, mine being one of them, so I must acknowledge the lead claimants of Y2915 that set the frame for my claim. As I've spoken before, I was illegally adopted and stolen, and that was the reason that I was, one of the reasons I was brought in as a lead claimant on the urgent inquiry as a stolen baby in 1961, and of course, as we know, they're still stealing our tamariki today. So that was one of the reasons that I was brought on to give evidence in the urgent inquiry. But also, I've raised two little girls that SIFS asked me to do many years ago, 10 years ago, and I'm a great adopted uncle to these children. And I had two affidavits at the urgent inquiry. One was about my stolen life and the ramifications growing up into a man and everything I lost, but I also had another affidavit about the girls I've raised. So that was my involvement in the recent urgent inquiry of the Waitangi and why I was there. But the report from the tribunal came out in April this year, some 4 months ago. I'm a named lead claimant in that report and recommendations. The recommendations are quite directed and quite clear. And, you know, I'd just like to say it's the recommendations in Hea Parahakiki, the report from the tribunal, are very, very directive. But they have given Māori, I believe, a very powerful platform for the first time and looking at taking control of our destiny as Māori, but also the destiny of Tamariki Māori. And, you know, I'm blessed that the Waitangi Tribunal have seen my lived experience. And this is why I'm called apart. I don't have a doctorate or a PhD. I'm not a sir or a dame. But as the report says, it's most crucial that lived experience be involved through the process of these recommendations. And that being, it keeps focus on the issues at hand. And I've been called upon it. Your producer sent me some questions yesterday, and I don't know if you have a copy of them this morning, because I was sort of prepared to sort of answer them. I've written down some points and, you know, feed off.
Well, I have. I know that there's, you know, you're frustrated that the dames, I mean, most of our listeners know who we're referring to, then, you know, talking Tūraiti and Tari and Nada and Merepeka, those ladies have been front and centre in critique of Oranga Tamariki, but now have pulled back, and you're hardly hearing that sort of criticism in the media. You say that you'd like to, You say they've said they would like to remain independent, therefore distance themselves from you and other lead claimants. Do you have any evidence of that happening?
Well, yes, we do. We've had a director back. I'm not prepared to single out members of the governance group, but yes, we've had a director email back from one of the members directing that they intend to remain independent. And we've had also that follow-up confirmation from their legal representation for this governance group member. So, like I said, I'm not prepared to name an individual, but we've had a clear directive from the governance group that they wish us luck, but they wish to remain independent. You know, the question's asked why. That's a really great question. Why have they distanced themselves, particularly in the face of the recommendations of the recent tribunal report? You know, I mean, it's pretty telling, the report, and I, you know, going right to the stages of saying blatant breaches of Te Tiriti o Waitangi. You know, and, you know, I'm actually amazed at the contents of the report and the honesty of the report and its findings. So, you know, the question asks is, you know, why have they distanced themselves, you know, particularly when the Waitangi Tribunal is the biggest platform for Māori voice and justice, if you like, aside. So I guess, you know, that's their question to answer, John. You know, I can't. We can all sit here and summarise and, you know, make scenarios up why, without actually a direct answer from them. That's their question to answer. But, you know, like I said, is it is a big question considering the recommendations, which are very directive. I guess that's a question that, you know, they'll need to answer to all the people. You know, as a part of the report too, we have contacted Minister Davis. As well as had a Zoom meeting a few months ago with Matthew Tukaki, the head of the Māori Ministerial Advisory Group to the Minister. Now, we had a response from Minister Davis recently citing the recommendation. We sent a letter to the Minister citing the recommendations, and he's just directed us back to Matthew Tukaki and to Witta Gardner. Now, there was a report due at the end of June from Matthew Tukaki's group to the Minister. We haven't seen anything of it or heard any of the contents of it. So we're waiting for that report. It's meant to be out. But, you know, this is not about hanging people out to dry. What the purpose of this is, we've got a very strong directive by the Waitangi Tribunal. And it's one of its directives is to do this now, not wait down the track of thing. It's about getting the ball rolling. This is how important that they've seen what's happening to Tamariki Māori and the damage done by taking them. So it's of the utmost urgency that we do all we can to stop them uplifting Tamariki Māori. You know, in the report too, it's quite a clear directive for the Crown to work in a true partnership alongside the lead claimants and the governance group to create a new Māori transition authority for Māori, by Māori, to care for Māori with the state stepping out. Now, never in the history...
And you're very passionate about the issue, as you should be. Sadly, though, we're curtailed somewhat by time. This is important corridor, and I don't mean to cut you off, but I do feel it important that we pose these questions that you've raised with those who were front and centre in the criticism of Oranga Tamariki and who have now backed off somewhat. I want to wish you well, Tony, because we'll get a chance to talk again, I'm sure. Tony Jarvis is a claimant in the Y2915 claim. That's the Oranga Tamariki claim. And as you can hear, his life has been changed irrevocably, and we support and tautoko him from afar. The best to you, Tony. Let's talk again soon, mate.
You're cool. Thank you, John.
Thank you. Have a good day. Thanks very much.
Bye now.